Good morning.
Good morning.
That was good. I like that. Frank must be here. Hey, Frank. It's good to see you. It's always good to be here. It's always good to be with friends and family and just be encouraged during this time. And you know, I say that often, but I mean it. It really is. I hope you feel the same way when we come together and we encourage each other during these times, these assemblies that God has provided for us. And so we're gonna continue this morning with our sermon series that we began last week, talking about having a faith that moves mountains. As we continue through the Gospel of Matthew and all that Jesus has said there. And so we talked a little bit about, I thought I would mention this on the onset. We talked a little bit about this in our Bible class, that these books, these letters, tend to have natural breaks in them, or they're structured in a certain way. And sometimes our translators have divided those for us sometimes, and sometimes they didn't do a great job, sometimes they did a great job. Sometimes we don't notice them, but they're there. And Matthew is broken up into different sections. Of course, the introduction of Jesus and his bringing of his 12 to follow him, and the collection of people, his teachings on the Sermon of the Mount. But there are also these times where Jesus will have a dialogue with a group of people, different groups, and then he will do some miraculous signs afterwards to kind of confirm that word. And so that pattern of dialogue and miraculous signs and dialogue and miraculous signs are prevalent throughout the book. And so it's helpful to me when I read through things like this, especially a long book like Matthew, is to find those and break them up and to study them. And so hopefully we've been doing that throughout this year, breaking those up into different sections and studying them and still maintaining the integrity of the book itself. So I thought this morning we'd start off with a fable. everybody knows Aesop and his fables. So I thought I would talk about a particular fable that I read this week, Aesop's fable about the man, the boy, and the donkey, in preparation for our lesson this morning. So I want to tell you about it. The fable is about a man and his son, and they're traveling down a road. And of course, they have their donkey with them. And they come across a couple of men on their journey, and one of the men looks at him and says, you know, don't you all know that donkeys are supposed to be ridden? And so the man takes his son and puts him on the donkey, and they travel on, they continue on their journey. And then they run across a few more people and they're on their travels, on their journey. And one of the individuals looks at them and says, you know, look at that lazy boy, you know, riding that donkey and making his poor father walk. So the father takes the boy off the donkey and he gets on the donkey, and they move along. And well, it doesn't take very long before, of course, they run into another group, and this group points the finger at them and says, you know, look at that lazy man, you know, riding that donkey and making his son walk. And so he reaches over, grabs his son, puts him on the donkey. So everybody's on the donkey and they're traveling, and they're coming close to the town that they're going to, and they run across another group, and that group begins to mock them, saying that they're overloading the donkey. You know, don't you know you're hurting the donkey? And so at this point, they don't know what to do. And so they both get off the donkey, they find a pole, and they tie the donkey's legs to the pole, and they hoist the donkey up on their shoulders, and they continue on their journey. And then they come to a bridge, and as they're crossing the bridge, the donkey becomes scared and begins to kick and kicks one of its legs free from its restraint, and both the boy and the father lose their grip on the pole, and the donkey, still tied mostly to the pole, falls off the bridge and into the water and drowns. And that's the end of the fable. And of course, with all of these fables, Aesop's fables, there's always a moral to the story, other than the fact that you never carry a donkey over a bridge. You know, I think that's pretty evident. But the moral of Aesop's fable is that please all and you will please none. That if you please all, then you will please none. And I think I read this or told you this fable because this illustrates a well-known fact about people, about us, that we crave validation. We crave approval. We're constantly looking for somebody else's approval. And even as I thought through that, I know that there are some who are going to say, no, I don't. I don't care what anybody thinks about me. I don't care what anybody else thinks of what I do or what I say. I really don't care. And that's not true. That's not true. You may think that, and you may even say that, but deep down inside, there's somebody that you have at some point in your life craved their approval. You've craved validation from them. You've desired for them to look at you with approval. And I feel that we all can relate to this. We all can relate to this. And it may not have to do with everyone. You may not be seeking everyone's approval, but there's somebody that you look to, that you look up to, that you want their approval. And much like the fable, our craving, our desire, our validation for approval is often a result of uncertainty and doubt. Right? If we're honest with ourselves, that's kind of where it comes from, isn't it? Most of the time, there's some uncertainty. There's some doubt. We doubt ourselves. We doubt our actions. We are uncertain about what we are saying or doing. We are uncertain about how we feel and how we respond. And all of these things feed our craving for approval, because if we can get enough people, or at least somebody, to acknowledge and approve of our actions, then it at least reinforces in our mind a little bit that maybe we're doing the right thing. Maybe we're on the right path. You know, if somebody in the fable, if somebody were to say, you know, you're doing a good job, you know, not riding on that donkey, that would be the last group, right? You know, then at least that's some approval. At least that's saying, well, at least somebody approves of me, right? But if you're constantly trying to change how you think and how you act and how what you believe based on everybody else's approval of you, then as the fable goes, you will never please anyone. It's impossible to please everyone. And I think another thing that we can kind of relate to as I was thinking through this is that we've all been around someone who seems to know everything. Now, no pointing fingers, all right? We're not, no accusations here, but we've all been around somebody like that. And it doesn't really matter if you've been around somebody, maybe you're kind of like that. I have a tendency to be like that in some things. And so maybe we're with that person and you're doing something with them, and it doesn't matter how you do it or what you're doing, you're constantly doubting everything because you're thinking, you know, I wonder what they're going to say when I do this, or I wonder what they're going to say when I respond this way. Because you know what they're going to say. You know, that's not how you do it. That's not how you do it. That's not right. You're doing that wrong. You're doing that. You know, if you're going to do that, you've got to hold the tool this way. Or, you know, you've got to stand right here or whatever. It doesn't matter what you're doing. There's something wrong with what you're doing. And at some point, right, whether that person is right or whether that person is wrong, at some point, you're just going to do what they tell you to do. You're going to do what they tell you to do because you just want them off your back, right? And at some point, you're going to start seeking their approval. Now, it may be reluctantly, but you're going to start seeking their approval if they're going to constantly look over your shoulder, constantly criticize what you do, constantly question every move that you make. At some point, that's the name of the game. Just to seek their approval, just for their approval. If I can just make them happy, then I'll be happy, you know? And we feel that way in many circumstances because our propensity to seek approval from others affects your life. Do you know that? It affects my life in ways that I probably don't even know about. But we all have that craving. We all have that propensity to seek the approval of others, and that controls us in ways that we may not even imagine. It blinds us to the truth, and it keeps us in the dark. It keeps us from hearing God's word. So we're going to continue. Can you guys, Allison, can you fix that, please? My little clicker's not working. There you go. Thank you. Absolutely. Thank you. I think I skipped ahead too many times. Sorry about that. All right, there we are. Okay, verse 10. So as we look at the text in Matthew chapter 15, this is where we left off last week. We were talking about the Pharisees and the scribes. This is another dialogue that Jesus has with these leaders, who, by the way, are very influential leaders in Jesus's day. So these are people who people look up to. They want their approval. They think about, well, what are the Pharisees going to say about this? What are they going to say about this? And I can tell you that the Pharisees are going to be very quick to say what's on their mind, because that seems to be their attitude. They want people to look to them for approval. And so they've accused Jesus and his disciples of not following the traditions of the elders. We talked about this last week, when they didn't wash their hands before they ate. You know, the idea is that they're defiling themselves. They're making themselves impure because they didn't follow the rules, right? And so these are people who are looking, and they're judging other people in various different forms, and these people are desperate to seek the approval of these religious leaders. Look at verse 10. After Jesus called the crowd to him, so this is shortly after that discussion, he looks at the crowd now, and he said to them, "Hear and understand." Now, I don't know if I've mentioned this before, maybe I have, but in Hebrew, in ancient Hebrew, there's no word for obey. We have a word in English, but there's no word for obey in Aramaic and ancient Hebrew. The word that is used is commonly shema, and it means to hear. Now, it could mean a number of different things. When Sarah overheard the conversation with Abraham and the angel, she shema, she heard, right? And she understood and she laughed, right? We understand that story. There's different ways in which that's used, but there's no word for obey. So it's assumed that if you're listening to somebody with authority and you've actually heard them and you've comprehended and understood, that you're naturally going to obey that person. So it carries the weightiness of obedience depending on who is hearing and who is speaking. And so when Jesus says, "Hear and understand," there's weightiness to the authority of Jesus's words when he is telling the people, "Listen to me," as opposed to who? Well, the teachings of the Pharisees and the scribes, right? You know, "Listen to me. My words have weightiness. Listen to my words and obey them." So he's telling them, you know, "Turn your ear this way. Trust in my words." Verse 11, he says, "It is not what enters the mouth." We're discussing this concept of defilement. It's not what enters the mouth that defiles a person, but what comes out of the mouth that defiles the person. Now then again, a little more background on why these people are saying these things. Under the old system, the old law, a person was considered ritually impure. They were ritually impure if they did something like touch a dead body. They were ritually impure, or touch something that a leper had touched, or even the clothing or a house that the leper lived in, or anything that was related to death or decay. If that person touched that, then that person was ritually impure. It would somehow transfer to them, you know, if you can imagine it that way, that you touch something and it just transfers to you and you become impure. Now, I think one misunderstanding is the fact that being impure, being ritually impure, was not a sin. That wasn't a sin to be ritually impure. Right? I mean, all they had to do really was wait a while. There was a time frame there, you know, take a bath, offer a sacrifice, and they're pure again. You know, what was sinful is if a person ritually impure, having touched something impure and not gone through this process of purification, attempted to waltz into the presence of God in an impure state. Now that was a sin. That was worthy of death. And so the Jews were hypersensitive to this concept because they wanted to maintain a level of ritual purity, right? So we think about that in regards to the eating of bread. You know, their thought is, well, what if somebody didn't, you know, had touched something that was related to impurity, and then they touched the bread in preparation or something like that. And they thought, well, what would happen is that the bread would become impure, and I eat the bread, so therefore I'm ritually impure. And to avoid that happening, let's make a law, let's make a rule that says that before you eat your bread, doesn't matter where it comes from, before you eat your bread, you wash your hands, and that will ritually purify you. Now, the scriptures don't actually teach that, but that's how they began to process this information that is being spoken. Now, when they say this, all right, when they're talking about this, they're missing the point about who they're talking to. And I'm hoping that we can kind of develop this idea. Who is Jesus? Who are they speaking to? Who are they accusing of not teaching the disciples to wash their hands before they eat, the ritual impurities? They're accusing Jesus, but who are they accusing? God, right? I mean, the very one in whom they desire to approach. You know, so it's almost kind of strange to think about what they're talking about here. You know, here's Jesus. They're talking to Jesus and they're saying, don't you know that your disciples are not going to be ritually pure if they don't wash their hands? They're not going to be able to be approved of God. They're not going to be able to approach God in worship. And Jesus is looking at him like, don't you know who I am? Right? That he is Emmanuel. That he is God with us. And people were coming to him and they were touching him. Remember? They were touching. You know, I know it's emphasized a lot and we might skip past it, but this is significant, folks. Remember Mark's gospel in Mark chapter 5, verses 27 and 29. Remember this occasion with this woman who had this hemorrhage for 12 years. And it said that after hearing about Jesus, she came up into the crowd behind him and she touched his cloak, you know, just touching the garment. Okay, the Pharisees would have freaked out, right? They would have been really upset about this because how dare you defile me with your impurity? How dare you touch me because you're impure? But this woman felt that that's what she needed to do is just touch the fringe of his cloak, right? And then it says in verse 28, for she had been saying to herself, if I can just touch his garment, I will be well. And immediately, having done this, the flow of her blood was dried up and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. So not only this, of course, there's other occasions where Jesus goes around and there, you know, there's this ceremony where a widow's only son is being moved along and he goes over and touches him. And everybody's freaking out over that because, you know, you just don't do that. Jews don't just go around touching dead things, you know, because of the impurity that it brings upon them. And Jesus goes around and touches lepers and he touches people that are impure. And what happens to Jesus? Does he become ritually impure when he does these things? No. In fact, instead of he absorbing their impurity, what happens to them? They're healed. That's amazing. The implications of this are huge. The implications for them were huge. What do you mean? Do you mean that if I'm a follower of Jesus, that I don't have to follow all of these purity laws and ritual laws? Well, yeah, that's what it means. Because your ability to be approved of God, your ability to approach God is no longer seen around the temple life. Life around the temple required people to be hypersensitive and mindful of purity and rituals. Life around Jesus is acknowledging and putting your faith in He as the one who makes you pure. You want to approach God? You want to be approved of God? It's not any longer about ritual purity. It's about your relationship to Jesus. That is how you become approved of God. So if you think about it this way, the things that the scribes and the Pharisees were saying about laws and rituals and purities, the ones they made up and the ones God gave to them rightfully, are absurd in the context of the one in whom they are speaking to, Jesus, God with us, the one who brings about our purity. Verse 16. Or maybe we're in verse 17. I skip verse 16. I'm going to read verse 16. Verse 16 says, and Jesus said, are you also lacking in understanding? This comes a little further along in the text. And this is where Peter is questioning Jesus about what he just said, right? So Jesus has said this about, it's not what goes in the mouth, right? It's what comes out that defiles a person. And Peter's got some questions about this. like Peter often does. And so he begins to ask, and then Jesus looks at him and says, you know, why don't you understand this? You know, don't you get this, Peter? Don't you understand what's going on here? Don't you know who I am? Do you understand that I have come to accomplish this, the purification of my people? And then in verse 17, it says, do you not understand that everything that goes into the mouth passes into the stomach and is eliminated? And it's just natural thinking here. But the things that come out of the mouth come from where? The heart, the mind. That is revealing. That is revealing. If you want to talk about approval, if you want to talk about purity, if you want to talk about being able to approach your God, we need to start talking about what's coming out of you. What's coming out of your mind? What is inside your mind? What are you thinking about? What is your focus? What are you focusing on? What do you value in life? What are the things that are important to you? What's inside your mind? So Jesus goes on to explain exactly what he means by this in verse 19. He says, for out of the heart comes evil thoughts, murders, acts of adultery, other immoral sexual acts, theft, false testimony, slanderous statements. These, Jesus said, are the things that defile a person. But to eat with unwashed hands does not defile a person. You know, use that verse by itself, and it sounds kind of strange out of context. But Jesus is saying that in order to be undefiled, it goes beyond what you're eating. It goes beyond that. But it's what comes out of your mouth, what comes out as a result, the fruit of what's in your mind. How you live your life, what you think about, the things that you're focused on, what you want to do, that is the thing that you need to be thinking about, right? So if your mind is bent on all of these things that Jesus has talked about, you may not have actually done these things, right? I mean, that's not necessarily the implication, but it's in your heart. It's in your mind. It's in your heart's desire. It's what you think about. It's what you want to do. It's there somewhere. And Jesus says, that is the problem. If you want to talk about approval, if you want to talk about being approved of God, being able to approach God in worship, these are the things we need to be talking about. This is the discussion we need to be having. Not whether you washed your hands before you ate your bread. That's not the discussion we need to be having. We need to be having this discussion because that's the heart of the matter. That's where the focus needs to be. That's what we need to think about. And when we put our faith in Jesus, we gave up all of these things, right? We gave up all of these things. And what Jesus has come to accomplish, what Jesus has come to bring about was a total and complete purity, cleansing of the heart, of the mind of humanity, right? To put us on a different path, to give us a new life to live, to give us new direction and new purpose, to bring about a new creation that begins right here with Jesus as people submit themselves, their whole selves, not just their bodies, but their minds, their heart, their whole life to King Jesus, to living in purity, so that through him we can approach our Father in worship. And that is what Jesus has come to give us. Not just the forgiveness of past sins, although yes, absolutely those things as well, but the fact that we can continue living a new life, a new way of thinking, a new model to follow, a new pattern to follow after, a new person to look to and say that I need to follow in his footsteps. And if you think about that in contrast to what the Pharisees are teaching and the scribes are teaching, what are they teaching? You need to follow in my footsteps. You need to look to me. You need to seek my approval. That when I say that you need to wash your hands before you eat, if you want to be approved by me, then you need to do that too. That when we come together and we decide that this is right and this is wrong, that we're the authority,
That we're the ones you're looking up to. We're the ones you're following. We're the ones that are setting the model. We're the ones setting the standard. And here comes Jesus, and he says, no. It's me, right? They're doing it in arrogance. He's doing it in humility and saying that I am the one that you need to follow. And life following Jesus looks a lot different than the ritual cleansings that the Jews endured. So now think about that. Now back to verse 12. We're kind of moving in a different direction. Move back to verse 12 again. And the disciples, right, after seeing all of this and having read this, we understand where we're going here. The disciples came and they said to Jesus, now imagine this, right? Jesus has said this about the defilement, you know, that it's not what goes in the mouth, it's what comes out of the mouth. And they're a little puzzled by this. They consider it a riddle, actually, a parable, because they don't understand it. And Peter, the disciples come to him, I assume it's Peter. He says, do you not know that the Pharisees were offended when they heard this statement? It's odd, isn't it? I mean, you wonder, do they get it yet? Do they understand what they're saying? Do they understand who they are following? Do they understand who Jesus is? Why would they say something like this? Why would they be concerned about this? Who are they trying to please? Who are they trying to please? Are they trying to please God? Do they want God's approval? Because what it seems like to me is they're really interested and concerned about what the scribes and the Pharisees think about them. What do the Pharisees think about Jesus? What do the Pharisees think about the disciples? What do the scribes think about them? You know, how can Jesus, if you keep saying stuff like this, you know, you're going to offend everybody and nobody's going to follow you. Nobody's going to pay attention to you. Nobody's going to take you seriously if you keep offending everybody. But if we can get you in a certain way, maybe we can change your clothes. Maybe we can change the way you talk. You know, we'll coach you about what to say. And if we can get to a point, maybe the Pharisees will accept you. And if the Pharisees accept you, they will accept us and we can all work together. That would be great, wouldn't it? Wouldn't that be good? Is Jesus concerned about that? The disciples seem to be very concerned about that. Jesus doesn't seem to be all that concerned about their approval. They may disapprove of him. His approval rate may go down, right? I mean, we talk about that with the presidency, the approval rate goes down. You know, you're not doing the right stuff. Your approval rate's going down, Jesus. You know, you got to pick this thing back up again. We got to do some social networking. We got to make you look good. No. And they come to him and they say, you offended them. Jesus, you offended the Pharisees in verse 13. But he answered and he said, every plant which my heavenly Father did not plant will be what? Uprooted, right? And I don't think he's talking about Israel in general because God planted Israel. But he's talking about teachings. That's what he's going to continue talking about all the way through chapter 17, that there's teaching involved. And these Pharisees are teaching something about purity, about ritual pureness, about being approved by God. They're teaching something, but these teachings didn't come from God. They're planning something, no doubt, in the hearts of men, but what they're planning didn't come from God. They're going to be uprooted. Anybody who follows these teachings are going to be uprooted. Look at verse 14. He says, leave them alone. They are blind guides of the blind. And if a person who is blind guides another who is blind, both will fall into a pit. Right? They don't know what they're saying. They don't understand. They don't get it. They're putting themselves out there as authoritative figures, but they don't get it. And if you choose to follow them, if that's where we want to go, if you want me to start saying things the Pharisees are going to approve of, if you want me to stop saying things that are going to offend the Pharisees, that's where we're going. That's the path we're on. Do you want that path? Because they're blind. And if you follow them, you're blind. And you're both going to fall into a pit, right? Because that tends to be what happens. We live in a weird generation, don't we? We live in a generation where it seems like everybody is offended by everything. And maybe it's because information is so readily available. Maybe it's out there so much and we hear so much about it. But it seems like we live in that generation. And people and companies and schools and even governments are changing known truth for a lie because they don't want to offend somebody. They're trying to seek the approval of everyone. But just like we read from the fable, right, that if you try to please all, what's going to happen? You will please none, right? It's never going to end. It's never going to end. If your goal is to make everyone happy, if your goal is to listen to and to obey every religious leader that comes along, if you are seeking the approval of others, guess what? It will never end. It will never end. That path is a destructive path. That path leads us along with the blind. It will never end if we attempt to be approved by everyone. But if we try and attempt and desire to seek the approval of our Heavenly Father, that is going to change everything. That is going to change our life. I thought about the words of Paul as we closed this morning. Paul, a former Pharisee, right, who would have been right there in the midst of some of those talking about these things. A Pharisee was being accused by some false teachers of his day about teaching different things when he was with the Jews. So he's with his Jewish brethren teaching something different. Then he comes over to the Gentiles and they say, well, once he's with you, he's teaching something way different. So let me tell you what Paul really says. And so they're accusing Paul of these things. And then in Galatians chapter 1, I didn't have that verse there, sorry. I'll read it to you. Galatians chapter 1 and verse 10, Paul says that, am I now trying to win the approval of human beings? I mean, is that where we're going here? Is that what I'm trying to do? Is that what you're accusing me of? Because that's what it sounds like you're accusing me of just seeking the approval of people or of God, right? Which is it? What are we trying to do here? Or am I trying to please people? If I were still trying to please people, listen to what he says, I would not be a servant of God. See, that's where it leads. If we are trying to make everybody happy, if we're trying to please everybody, if we're trying to manipulate known truth so that nobody gets offended, if we're trying to constantly seek the approval of every single person that we run across on the road of life, that's where it leads us. You will not be a servant of Christ if you try to please everyone you run across. And at some point, you're going to have to make a choice, right? At some point, you're going to have to make a choice. Who are you going to listen to? At some point, you're going to have to choose whose approval you are actually seeking. Are you seeking the approval of others? Are you seeking the approval of yourself? Self-approval. Are you seeking that? Or are you seeking the approval of God? Which side are you on? Who are you following? Because if you're a follower of Jesus, you need to be seeking him. So I know we're already got a tie, but I wanted to make this point very clear. I should be very concerned with what you think about me. All right? And you should be concerned with what I think about you. You know why? Because as I am a follower of Jesus, and as you are a follower of Jesus, and we are seeking to be approved to do the things that God desires us to do, and we're trying to live that life together collectively as one body, right? And you see something about me, you know, that's not right. That's not in line with the teachings of Jesus. That's not in line with that kind of lifestyle. If you see something about me that's not right, and I'm trying to seek the approval of God, and you're trying to seek the approval of God, and you see me doing something that doesn't line up with that, then you should come to me and say, Brother Sean, what you're doing is not right. It doesn't line up with the teachings of Jesus. And likewise, when I see something of you and I say, I know we're on the same path, we're heading to the same place, we all desire the approval of our God. And let me tell you from the truth, from Scripture, that what you're doing is not something that God approves of, that we have an obligation. We're not trying to please the whole world, and I'm technically not trying to seek your approval. But as we seek the approval of God together, we have an obligation to each other and one another to serve and to love one another. But we need to be hypersensitive about this concept of seeking everybody's approval and falling short of the approval of God. And we need to be aware of these things because Paul is very clear about this, right? If you are trying right now to seek the approval of every person that you come across, if you're trying to make everybody happy, if you're trying to seek the approval of every individual in your life, it will fail. It will fail. And the end result is you will not be a servant of Jesus. So if there's anybody here this morning, as we conclude this service this morning, if there's anybody who needs prayers from the congregation, we're here for you. We're here to help you with those things. And if you have struggles and you have fallen short of life and done things that you shouldn't have done, we're here to help you because we're all on the same path to seek God's approval. Or if you have not put on Jesus in baptism and you desire to begin this journey with this group, with the followers of Jesus, and you desire to have your sins forgiven so you can walk in newness of life, we're available for that too, to be baptized into Jesus as we stand and as we sing.